This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. My Favorite Murder is a wildly successful true crime comedy podcast, and it's coming to Cincinnati on Saturday. Its one-night performance at the Aronoff Center is sold out. The rise in popularity for true crime stories is seen not just in that podcast, but also in new Netflix series like the one about the Ted Bundy tapes or the upcoming Ted Bundy movie that was shot here in Northern Kentucky and Cincinnati. There have also been hit drama series recently about the murder of Johnny Versace or the O.J. Simpson murder trial. What's fueling this rise? Amber Hunt is the special projects reporter for the Cincinnati Inquirer. She also hosts the hit podcast Accused, which has two seasons and is currently working on the third season. She's also written five true crime books. Amber is in the studio with us today. Thank you for joining us, Amber.
Hello.
So let's start with you, because I want to know, what drew you to this genre of true crime?
I started, well, when you're a young reporter, they often start you on the police beat because you're green and you can only mess it up so much. And it's a great, like, learning ground for a new reporter. So one of my very first jobs was in Iowa City. I had to go to the courthouse. I was a little correspondent for the Cedar Rapids Gazette. So I had to go to the courthouse and flip through the files and find interesting stories. So my very first job was doing that. And then my first murder that I covered was in Michigan. And I just seemed to have a knack for connecting with people on an empathetic level. And so every time I would try to pull myself out of crime writing, because it does take a toll on you, I would end up kind of getting sucked back in. And I've sort of just accepted that that's kind of what I do. I'm good at it. And I just try and make a point to take breaks for self-care purposes.
So that's your story. That's how you got pulled into this and developed a strong interest in it. But what do you think is fueling the popularity of true crime in America? It does seem different today than it ever has before.
It does seem a little different, although I think some of it is sort of the same way that, like, we hear more about celebrity deaths and we hear more about, you know, news in Sao Paulo, Brazil, for example. We're just a little more connected now, and the medium is different. When I started writing true crime books, my first one came out in 2010, and there was a built-in audience for it. I mean, they were comfortable giving you an advance, not a huge one, but you got, you know, a little money to write these books because they knew that they would sell. Well, now it's more readily available in podcast form. And then because the podcast took off so much, the TV shows followed. And so I don't know that, I think it's tapping into something that has already been there, but we see it much more in our face now.
Yeah, the idea of true crime has been around for a long time. We can remember series like America's Most Wanted, 48 Hours, but those shows tend to focus on crime victims. Are you seeing a change in the number of productions that are available or resources that are available for people who might be more interested in justice for people who are wrongly accused?
I do feel like that is a huge difference from before, because when I would pitch a book that had to do with a possible wrongful conviction, it would get shot down. I wouldn't get anywhere with my agent or a publisher with that, but I can do it in podcast form. And you absolutely see it more now with the Netflix series and so forth. So I think people are becoming more aware that just because somebody's convicted doesn't necessarily mean that they are guilty. And these podcasts and shows, I think, are starting to highlight some of the concerns that we should have with the justice system.
Are we seeing any significant change in the justice system based on these types of productions or books?
I think what we will see is, you know, a younger group of detectives coming in, having listened and watched this sort of thing, and hopefully knowing about confirmation bias and knowing that they need to make sure that they're not trying to pervert evidence to fit their theory, rather than, you know, come to a truthful answer based on the evidence. So I think it'll be a little bit longer term before we see what impact this has, but I hear from people going into law enforcement saying, thank you for your work. It has changed how I look at my cases.
You're seeing a reaction from law enforcement officers.
Yes.
That tends to be more empathetic now to people who are accused.
Yeah, yeah. And we take plenty of them off, too. So don't get me wrong. I mean, but for the most part, the response that we get is enormously appreciative and positive.
So you've produced a very successful podcast series. You're now working on the third series. I'm calling it a series. Is that the right?
I'd call it a season.
A season?
Yeah, sort of like a TV show.
Yeah.
It's under the same concept umbrella. So the idea that somebody was accused and we are looking into whether that is it was a rightful accusation or not, they all have to fit that. So it is sort of like a anthology.
So the first one in the accused seasons has proven to be quite popular. 250,000 listeners on SoundCloud in just the first 2 weeks.
That was just the first 2 weeks. So between the two seasons now, we actually have, we're close to 20 million downloads.
Not bad.
So in podcast terms, because it's hard to know like what's a success, and people treat their numbers fairly proprietarily. They don't just tell you what their honest numbers are. You're considered pretty successful, like in the 1% range when you're above like 50,000 downloads. Well, we're crossing 1 million per episode. So that's pretty good. We did well.
Yeah. So how was it distributed? How did people gain attention? Because this had to reach outside of this area.
Oh, it absolutely did. Yeah. And in fact, we can see where people are listening. And we get emails from people in England, New Zealand, Australia. So what I have found as a crime reporter is that a good story, and good is in quotation marks, but a solid story is a solid story, and it resonates far beyond the location. So even before I had any clue that the first season would do well, I mean, we went into this knowing nothing and not expecting much. But we still thought, okay, if we are going to resonate with people, we need to treat everyone as though they don't know anything about Cincinnati. So I talk about Cincinnati, you know, I describe what the town is like, where it is, all of that stuff, just in case you're listening and you're from New Zealand. So
who was the first victim that you focused on?
Elizabeth Andes. And she's always going to have a special place in my heart. I'm hoping to see something more happen with that case. She was a 23-year-old Miami University student, and she was found dead in her Oxford apartment. Police immediately zeroed in on her boyfriend, brought charges. Two separate juries, one civil, one criminal, did not believe that he did it. But police said, well, the jury's got it wrong. Case closed. And so we being my reporting partner, Amanda Rossman, she's also my producer, we took another look and we found three or four other people. You know, if the boyfriend was worthy of looking at, these gentlemen also were certainly worthy of looking at too.
Okay, so how many episodes do you try to do per season?
8 has felt like a sweet spot. It's long enough for us to give a lot of detail. Without it being, it's important to me ethically not to do one of the podcasts that records in real time as we're investigating. For me as a journalist, I don't want to lead you down a path that ultimately is a red herring. I want it to be thoroughly investigated before I present. So for me, 8 episodes has been long enough for me to report it out for a year, but not so long that I'm just throwing out theories, you know?
Well, that's something I wanted to ask you about, because while you're working on these, you take on some of the attributes that a detective would take on. But then again, I guess journalism and detective work, they're not too unsimilar.
They're not. They're really not. And that's not to say that, you know, police officers don't get impressive training. They do. But there is something beneficial to how a reporter is trained. You know, there's the cliche, if your mother says she loves you, check it out. Well, that's real. And the idea behind that is don't trust what you hear. Don't take anything for granted. And my mantra is, I could be wrong. What if I'm wrong? You know? And in our first season, I actually asked that of one of the original investigators. I said, what if you're wrong? And he said, well, what if the sky falls? What if Jesus comes back tomorrow? You know, that's no way to live. Well, no, actually, if you're wrong, you called somebody a murderer his whole life. Like, this matters. We only have so much time on this earth. Let's not be flip when we ruin somebody's life.
So you're out there digging up all this information, and then you have to piece it together. And you said you're shooting now. You figure that 8 episodes tends to be the sweet spot for you. From a production standpoint, how do you map all that out?
This is where it turns out that all of the experience I've had leading up to Accused pays off, especially because I have written 5 true crime books. The first 2, I would say, are kind of terrible because I didn't know what I was doing. You know, I mean, everybody learns. Sometimes you learn the hard way. But what I did learn along the way was how to organize. And so by the time I did my 3rd book, I felt pretty comfortable with taking huge amounts of information and figuring out how to organize chapters. So for me, every episode I treat as a chapter.
Amber Hunt is a special projects reporter for the Cincinnati Inquirer and has produced some very successful podcasts in the true crime genre and has also written some books. We're going to continue our conversation with Amber after this short break. You're listening to Cincinnati Edition. Thanks for listening to Cincinnati Edition On Demand. Did you know you can have the show delivered straight to your smartphone every day? Just go to your favorite podcast listening app, search Cincinnati Edition, and subscribe. You'll be able to keep up with all our great conversations with newsmakers, public officials, and other interesting people from the greater Cincinnati region and beyond on the go, anytime, anywhere. It's great for those days you can't tune in to catch us live. Weekdays at noon on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. My favorite murder, this wildly successful true crime comedy podcast, is in town on Saturday, but the show at the Aronoff Center is sold out. It's just another demonstrator that the true crime genre is surging in popularity. Another great example of that is the locally produced Accused podcast series. And one of the people behind that is Amber Hunt. She's a special projects reporter for the Cincinnati Inquirer. She hosts the hit podcast Accused and has written 5 true crime books. She's in the studio with us today. We talked a little bit about the first season that you did, focusing on Miami University student Elizabeth Andes, who was killed. Your second one focused on the unsolved murder of Retha Welch. Let's listen to a piece from that.
There are many, many people in prison who are not guilty, and yet they're just not getting relief.
My belief is that the jury got this right.
If you got my footprint on Mars, and I tell you I wasn't at Mars, how did it happen?
Regardless of the fact that I was innocent of this, I still was paying for things that I had done.
At least find out if this person is innocent and is in there wrongfully.
If somebody comes up and confesses to a crime that somebody else already been convicted for, they don't open the jail and let him out.
A lot of great production value in that. So how many people are working on it?
You would be surprised at how few. and this is our first major podcast at the Cincinnati Inquirer. Since we've done this, we have more now. But Amanda Rossman had to learn production. And so the first season, it was she and I reporting, and then Amy Wilson would edit. And after the success of the first season, we added Phil Didion to help with production. But that's kind of it. Just the 4 of us.
Okay, so this second one focuses on Retha Welch. Can you give us an overview?
Retha Welch's case is a little different because in this case, the suspect was convicted. His name was William Virgil. He went to prison, and in this case, he continued to proclaim his innocence, got the attention of the Innocence Project, And they had to fight like crazy to get DNA tested in this case, but they did. And once they did, it didn't match his, he was released. It took a lot of fighting. But what's interesting to me in this case and many like it is that even though they had to release him and they decided not to pursue charges again, they still say, they being the prosecutors, well, yeah, but that doesn't mean he's not guilty. Okay, maybe that's true, but why can't you prove it then?
You open the second podcast season by saying, quote, if you ever want a sense of how many unsolved or sloppily investigated murders there are out there, just pick one to examine and go from there. That sounds like picking apart any murder case could drum up some interest in either that particular one or another one. Is that what you're saying?
That's exactly it. As soon as we looked at Beth's case in season one, the floodgate sort of opened. I have a spreadsheet now with about 40 potential cases to investigate. It can be overwhelming sometimes, but it just goes to show how many people feel like their loved one's death was not properly investigated. That doesn't mean I am not at all the type to think that police don't do an amazing job, because I've seen some seriously difficult cases solved by hardworking detectives. But not everybody's like that. And when it doesn't work out that way, you've got really frustrated families left behind.
So how do you decide which cases are either worth your time or investment in exploring in this format?
It's tricky. You need to know that there are people who can talk. I don't just rehash and, other investigations. I need to be able to get my hands on some documents and do a proper investigation. I need to feel like we have a shot at making a difference. And I also want it to be a case that isn't already being looked at or hasn't been looked at in a widespread manner. So we nixed two for season three because they had TV production crews following them. I mean, we have limited resources. I don't want to waste those resources.
So you mentioned season three. So
that's
there
right.
is another one coming up. What can you tell us?
Yeah, it's an interesting case. I'm always a little superstitious about identifying the case before it airs, because who knows what could happen between now and air date. But I will say it's from the 80s, and it's different because the family in this case thinks that it was a homicide. The investigators aren't so sure.
When you're exploring the subject of a murder, you're dealing with what was probably the worst day in some of these folks' lives, losing somebody so suddenly and potentially violently. How do you deal with approaching those people who are so emotionally impacted by the subject?
I covered crime in Detroit for almost 8 years. And in those cases, it was breaking news crime. And I would have to go to a house where people just learned what happened. And it ripped my heart out every time. For me, these are a bit easier because they are cold cases. The family's already gone through the rawest of the times, and they know that when I am approaching, I'm not doing it to be a vulture. I'm doing it because I genuinely care about trying to move the needle in this case. And they're usually really desperate for that. So they've been much more embracing of me in this capacity, and emotionally, that's much easier for me to deal with.
You've taught a journalism class at the University of Cincinnati, so I'm going to ask you just to put a professor hat on for me, just as a journalism student. When you're involved in these stories and you're uncovering evidence in your own investigation, how do you handle your role as the storyteller with the ethics of journalism and how it all plays out? Just help me understand.
It is tricky. And so what we did, because in these cases, the people you would expect to be investigating it, they aren't. So we are. And we decided that we would just be really transparent about what we were doing and why we were doing it. So in the first season, you hear me straight up say, my goal is to solve a murder. And the reason I say that isn't for bravado. It's actually an ethical statement saying, I want to be clear what my motives are here. So that lets you take or leave what I say from that point on. You know why I'm doing this. So it's definitely different than the other kinds of reporting. I never walked up to a Detroit house and felt like, oh, I'm going to try and solve this, you know. But in this case, with this format specifically, it's such an intimate thing to be in somebody's ear like that. There's a lot more freedom to do that. And frankly, it fits me better professionally to just be able to say, this is what I want to do. I want to make a difference here.
So you were a Knight Wallace Fellow at the University of Michigan. And while there, you worked on a project titled Embracing Empathy in Urban Crime Reporting. What was your message in that?
You see a lot of crime reporters try and keep things at arm's length. And to an extent, you have to do that professionally. But at the same time, it is my belief that you can't make people feel a case if you don't feel anything. So when I approach victims and survivors, I say, you don't have to talk to me. I'm so sorry to reach out to you this way. If this isn't right for you, that's okay. And when it's, when it's ripping at me during an interview, I might cry, and I've come to accept that in myself and accept that that is part of what makes me good at this specific job.
Yeah. I mean, crime is such a driver of eyeballs and clicks across all the different local media platforms. Do you think that empathy is something that a lot more of us in the media business could stand to learn about in covering this issue?
Yeah, I absolutely do. It's hard when you're a breaking news reporter because you have to go from one scene to another to another. But the fact is that I don't think you can do the job well if you're not understanding how this is impacting people. So yeah, I think empathy goes a long way in not just in crime reporting, but in society. We could all use a little more empathy right now. So,
and when you talk about empathy, we're not just talking about the crime victims. Are we also talking about people who may find themselves in the crosshairs of the judicial system?
Oh, absolutely. And think about, let's say you have a suspect. Let's say he's guilty of sin. That doesn't mean his mom isn't standing there with her heart ripped out too, A lot of times these family members didn't ask or contribute to this act that tears their lives apart. So yes, I absolutely reach out to them with the same kind of empathy.
So again, season 3 of Accused is kind of in the works. You kind of have the topic.
I feel something dramatic would have to happen for it to fall through, but I'm knocking on wood. So if you hear that, sorry. But we're looking at fall. And we actually already even have season 4 identified.
Oh, my gosh.
Well, when you have a list of 40,
Absolutely.
But so we're thinking that 3 and 4 might be a little closer together than, say, 2 and 3 were. But we're trucking right along.
So maybe season 3 of The Accused coming this fall, the Cincinnati Inquirer.
That's the plan. Yep.
Amber Hunt is the special projects reporter at the Cincinnati Inquirer, also host of the podcast Accused, and author of 5 true crime books. We've been talking to her today. Amber, thanks for this conversation.
Thank you.
Our thanks to Amber Hunt. You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition. The producer for today's show is Pete Reitmeier. The assistant producer is Selena Reeder. The technical director is Josh Elstro. I'm Michael Monks. Subscribe to our podcast at WVXU.org.